Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So, first of all, let's call the meeting to order. Adoption of the agenda.
I move we adopt the agenda.
I see that Janice enters the building.
Okay. Hey, Janice.
I'll second it. Janice.
Okay, all in favor? Wonderful. Approval of the minutes. Unfortunately, I see they're not attached to the agenda, right?
I'm so sorry. No, they were online. They were online.
Oh, they were online? So is everyone comfortable approving the minutes? Or okay.
I want to suggest that there be change under approval of the minutes. It refers to the prior in October the 30th, and I believe it was November the 6th.
Okay.
Yeah, so you guys can check the records.
Did you get that? Okay, we can correct that.
Yeah.
So the minutes have amended. All in favor? Okay, this one's arriving from the minutes. So what we put together for you was two things. One is an overview of the planning cycle that the province has now kind of specified that this is the planning cycle that municipalities will follow. And then kind of a detailed breakdown of what our next 5 years essentially will look like in planning. So why don't we start with this one? And I hope everyone has the access to the documents, so you can kind of follow along with the arrow.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is what the province has said our new planning cycle should look like. And I'll describe it in general terms, and I'll bring it specifically to the years ahead of us. So the planning cycle will start with the housing needs report. So the housing needs report will say, you know, you need X number of units, say 10,000 units, anticipated in the next 20 years. So that would be year one of the five-year planning cycle. Year two would be that you amend your OCP to ensure that the OCP identifies where those 20 years of growth would be. So if the previous step said you need 20,000 units, your OCP has to have those 20,000 units. Okay? Year three is you change your zoning bylaw to pre-zone enough land for the 20,000 units that are identified in the OCP. And then we have 2 years where we all go to Hawaii and
with Andrew.
That's the time where I guess we take care of the other stuff that, you know, maybe wasn't a focus of the first 3 years. And then after that, the cycle repeats. So any questions about the general planning cycle?
Yeah, I have. From your point of view, what disruptions or challenges do you see in the public arena in terms of educating the community about the changes that have to happen? How big a problem is that going to be potentially? Because we're going to rezone our whole town. And I mean, how many people are going to get really upset about that and be disruptive? And What do you foresee in terms of a process there?
I think that the learning curve for the public and the communication challenge that we have is helping them understand that you have to do OCP reviews in a very timely and focused way,
yes,
which is different than the general approach to many OCP reviews in the past, which are wide-ranging, everything's on the table, and we talk about all aspects of governance. So in order to meet the timeline, we will have to sometimes do these OCP reviews that are really just about housing, right? Now, to be able to start and finish an OCP review in a year, and that's a relatively quick timeline. In the past, our OCP reviews have ranged from, say, 1.5 to 3 years, I think, in length, right? So definitely need to tighten that up. And helping the public understand that that's not because we don't care what the public has to say. It's just that we have to focus, you know, in order to meet the timeline. So it's kind of a reframing of what an OCP review will be, right? And so I think that's the biggest challenge. The zoning, which we will have to amend in the near future, I don't know what the public will do. I mean, I honestly don't anticipate, you know, pitchforks in front of town hall, because it's not our deal. Mm-hmm. We can send them, you know, the address of the the Parliament building or Adam Walker's office, but it's not the municipality that's causing this change. So there was a memo from, I think, Burnaby that had a statement that I thought was absolutely brilliant. It said, the province has not conducted adequate public consultation, you know, prior to undertaking these changes, and staff not recommend doing the consultation on behalf of the province.
Mm-hmm.
Not our thing, right? So, I think that's the approach.
I think that's correct, but what I think is not clear is the extent of the zoning changes that will be required. And so, I thought that by December 31, 2025, there were going to have to be some zoning changes.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, why don't we circle back to that for the next 5 years now? So that was the general sample. So that's a cycle that will repeat, presumably for many planning iterations to come, barring any, you know, unforeseen change, once again, coming from the province. So let's talk about what the near future will hold. So the planning cycle is a little bit different in this first round because the province has layered something else on the top of it that layered within the next 6 months, you need to pre-zone all the single-family residential lots in the town for up to 4 dwellings, right? So that's something new that's stuck onto the existing cycle. So you see that in this work plan, you know, the one we were looking at before, it has 2024 split into two parts because basically we're going to be kind of heads down, like, really in more of a sprint towards that June 30th deadline, and we'll get into the details of all the stuff that needs to happen in that sprint. But first 6 months of the year is that, and then we really need to complete the housing needs report, which is still a year one requirement by the end of the year, and then prepare to do a CP review next year, you know, to start and complete the CP review next year.
So we're not going to know how many housing units we need until the end of this year.
In theory,
yeah, okay.
So does that mean that under 2024, where it says December 31st, 2025, it really is 2025 or is 2024?
So the housing needs report needs to be done. Oh, prepare.
So that's confusing because we're going to answer.
That confused me.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, no, yeah. I've been confused about the December 31st, 2024.
Yes. January 2025.
Yes. Absolutely correct. I'm so glad you caught that.
Yeah, because it's like, well, are we talking panic this year, or do we really have the latest next one?
So we'll fix that
okay.
Quarter.
Thank you.
Yeah, so not panic, but a concerted
sorry.
Effort.
Okay.
I'm just, I can ask this question now. How do we determine, just a quick answer, how do we determine what housing is needed over the next year? What mechanism are we going to use?
So housing needs reports are generated by the growth that we see in the census, by the demographics that comes out of the census as well, like in terms of income levels, right? So there's it's usually identified as a growth trends, but also a gap analysis to see what kinds of housing is not being offered in the current market. And then a good housing needs report will say you need X number of units, and generally you should be looking for more of these particular kinds of units because they're short in the current market. So it could be that they say that we're short on rental accommodation. It could say you're short on one bedroom, three bedrooms, rooming houses, whatever that might be. So it's usually data driven, but there's also some qualitative input that is often a part of a housing needs report where they'll interview people in the community, whether, you know, from service organizations or even the Chamber of Commerce or those types of organizations to kind of validate the statistical. But
should the housing needs report something new?
We've done one before in collaboration with the regional district.
Doesn't that give the town a lot of latitude in terms of designing a future community? When you really think about it, you can say, well, these are the kinds of people we think we're going to have. And therefore, this is a number we're perfectly happy with that. Now just matched up with the zoning.
Yeah.
So it's not all bad. It's actually quite good.
I don't think that this is either all bad.
Yeah.
It's not all, you know, good. It's just different.
Yeah.
It's a different approach. And it's not, like, the real shortcoming, in my opinion, kind of still talked off to the side, is that they just did it without really consultation.
Yeah.
It's not so much that their approach is faulty. It's just that they did it in a condensed period of time without really talking.
I see.
So,
well, and I think it makes a difference how the town decides to do the zoning.
Yeah.
And so your comment before about you don't expect people with pitchforks outside, probably not, except if we start to do things that really go beyond our prescribed legislation.
Yeah.
So how you manipulate minimum parcel sizes for subdivision, that makes a huge difference. It makes a complete, you know, mathematical change to the number of lots that might be created in the number of units. Mm-hmm. So that is within the town's discretion.
Yep.
So I think there are elements that people might be upset about if they don't fully understand why they're being done and why they're being done where they are being done, like which areas.
And that's if you want to ask a question, and I'll follow.
Well, I was just going to say, we've got lots of aspirations from the past that an OCP would be looking at. Now, I'll just say one that's important to me, which is attracting and retaining one family. And youth. And in the past, that was really important. It was really important in one of the OCPs.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're successful in creating a strategy or strategies to do that,
mm-hmm.
then our housing needs are very different.
So it may have been the existing OCPs.
Well, it was.
Okay, so your comment segues perfectly into what I actually wanted from you today, hoping to get. So there's two parts of what's going on. One is what's prescribed to us from the province, and the other are the foreseen and unforeseen results of those changes. So the province is not requiring that we discuss design guidelines. But we better discuss design guidelines, right? You know, the province is not requiring that we look at servicing implications,
mm-hmm.
but we better discuss servicing implications. So I'm going to kind of go through an overview of what we've discussed at a staff level in terms of the results, the impact of these changes, and which years we've kind of slotted that work into. But I just want that to be the question in your mind, if you're okay, as I'm going through it. Like, what are we missing, right? What are the things that we should add to the work plan? Because if we don't think about them, we're going to regret not thinking about them in 5 or 10 years. So now we're on to this document with the big planning work plan subject to change. So this is the first 6 months where we are required to amend the zoning. So that's task number one. Update the zoning to comply with Bill 43. So now we're into the things that we better think about, in conjunction with those changes. So first of all, maybe jump in and putting together some interim design guidelines. Just make sure that on July 1st, someone can't walk in and build something absolutely hideous.
Can I just add a comment there? Sorry, I'm just thinking, where are all the potential, big hiccups here.
Right here.
If we updated the zoning without the design guidelines, we leave ourselves wide open to some crazy projects.
Yes.
So it's really important to put together.
Okay. Perfect. Good. Second one, short-term vacation rentals. And this is kind of a bit of a tangent, but the province also adopted some new short-term vacation rental legislation that comes into force in May. So I'm hoping to just put in some interim way to deal with those as well. That's also going to impact our community. If you have an Airbnb, you might want to just...
Because we don't currently have quite a lot of it.
No, but there's 130 in the town. So if one of those belongs to someone in this room, you're on notice.
I also think there's some confusion amongst people because some people believe that the province is now committing short-term rentals in residences and...
Mm-hmm.
So if the town's not going to permit that, then we need to be clear about that.
So that's why it's on the work plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's headed taking one step, doesn't lock with the town. So we need to kind of do that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We need to adopt or change our development and construction guidelines.
What's the development guideline?
Guide. So that's,
right.
that's a document that says how all the development processes in the town work. So what happens when you apply for a zoning amendment? What are the steps you go through? And sometimes, you know, a few of those have changed dramatically, so we need to update that so that when someone comes to the counter and wants to find out about applying to build something that's not permitted in zoning, what that process looks like, mm-hmm. development permit. Okay. We need to, we're going to start. Okay, so the interim ACC bylaw. The province so kindly gifted us a new tool called the amenity cost charge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. So the town can now identify amenities that the community needs. So, for example, if we need a new fire hall, we don't need a new fire hall, but I'm going to use that as an example. Okay.
Yeah, you're cool. Okay. We do need that.
Okay. We'll call it a pool. So the, we said we really need a pool. We know it's going to cost $1,000. So that $1,000, the town can now say, we're going to split that cost up so that every time someone develops, they're going to put $1 towards that pool. Right? So for every unit of development now, they're going to be letting an extra dollar that goes to the pool. And that's a tool that we can now use for pretty much any amenity that the town needs. So it could be a new trail, it could be a new fire hall, it could be all sorts of different things.
Is that at the discretion of the council?
It is. Yeah. It could even be used for example, parking, right? Like if we wanted to build a new parking lot to help the uptown core, like the commercial area, we could say we're going to charge an extra, you know, $1 per unit, and that money's going to go into a communal parking fund, which then we're going to use to, and so there's lots of flexibility in the tool. So we might want to think about adopting something so we have it right off the center.
But doesn't that replace something similar that's in place now?
The voluntary thing.
Don't we have people making contributions to things now? What's that called?
The sweeten the pot contribution.
Yeah. Also on is a community amenity contribution. So
but that's more wide open
letters and said we're giving you a tool. But
it's really the same as we've done.
It's kind of the same, but it's less flexible because the town and a lot of municipalities used to just say this is what we want. We'll negotiate for it. But now the new tool has to be charged on a per unit basis.
Mm-hmm.
But so in one side, it's less flexible. On the other side, the new tool is more flexible because you can use it for pretty much anything, and no one can argue your authority to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always been lots of fighting in the past, right, about, you're charging too much. Or if that's not fair, you should see how so-and-so does it. So now there's a really standard methodology. You tell them what you want. You spread it out. Everybody pays, right?
So from the town's point of view, that's not a worrisome kind of thing. Because I trust you guys. You're worried, I'm worried.
Yeah, no, this is just an extra tool. It's not a...
Yeah.
But does it say how much you can charge?
No.
Who decides how much?
There's lots of gray area and all these changes. It says that you can't use any of these tools to unreasonably hinder development. So... You know, from the lawyers in the room, is that just like an invitation for a lawsuit? Like, who's reasonable?
Well,
right?
What's
reasonable?
Yeah. Well, what I would say is there has always been a question about the legislative authority.
Yeah.
Lack thereof.
Absolutely.
For community amenity contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the years, it became more and more used.
Yeah.
The government kind of, you know, didn't do much about it. And that, to my mind, was a lawsuit waiting to happen. So I think it's better for it to be something that is clearly provided by legislation and work through the details of it.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
You know,
But it's still okay because it can be used to hinder development.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could say, if you want me to pay $50,000, I'm sorry, that's going to hinder my development.
Mm-hmm.
But
and I think you'll see that there are ways that you can do it that make it reasonable, and there are things that will clearly be unreasonable. But it may take a lawsuit to sort that out.
It'll take a few. Yeah, it'll be really interesting.
I think so.
A few years. Yeah.
I just have an example. I'm thinking about Linus Lewis's work. What about a developer that needs to bring a sewage line to the development and therefore provide sewage lines for people on route that were on wells before?
Mm-hmm.
How would it work there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you still have latecomers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, latecomers agreements would still be a tool.
Mm-hmm.
That might be something for a latecomers agreement as opposed to this kind of charge.
Yeah, so we haven't taken away any tools. We still have all the tools. Ironically, they even said we could still use community amenity contributions if we wanted.
On top of
that, you're just going to confuse the heck out of us. We need this for CACs and ACCs and this and DCCs and this. So it's just a little bit of alphabet soup to keep everyone on their toes.
You don't sound too alarmed in a lot of this. You sound like you see lots of constructive ways of using these changes.
I do think there's a lot of constructive ways. But it's not, the constructive ways are not going to invent themselves. Like, they're going to take some
interpretation, tenacity.
Okay, so without the beach report, short-term vacation accommodation,
can I ask a question?
Okay.
Can I ask a question about the housing needs report?
Yeah.
We haven't started that, have we?
No.
What relationship does it have, if any, to the questionnaire we worked out?
No.
And is the questionnaire we worked out in Valisdale?
Mm-hmm.
It will have to be rethought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It will. Because if I was going to the public now with a questionnaire, and I was a member of the public, I'd want to know, why aren't you asking stuff about this new legislation? So it's not in there yet.
Yeah. So there was two parts to your question. Like, one was, have you haven't started the housing needs report? And the answer is no, because the province hasn't released a guideline on how to do the housing needs report yet. So once they do that, then we're going to try to figure out what's involved and try to find the right people to do the report.
Do we have ends with the consultants that could do it? Because I can imagine it's going to be very busy. And wouldn't it be nice if we already had an interim agreement with Joe Bull?
Yeah. I haven't done much about how to do it effectively, but I'm waiting to see the
It's going to be a race.
Maybe they won't require that you need a consultant. Maybe they'll just have the process so cut and dry that you have to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, we'll just do it.
You'll do it.
Right. Because you're right, there's only so many consultants in the province, and if you have 180 plus municipalities all looking for those consultants.
Same deadline.
Yeah.
They're going to be paid very well.
Very excited.
Okay, so that was the planning work. So now, you know, we have to discuss,
I think it's just really important that the general public understands what's coming down the pike. I think there are municipalities that don't agree with what the province is trying to do and their mandates. And I think that there should be some communication with the community.
Mm-hmm.
I know in GVRD, Greater Vancouver Regional District, they've just had a report about they think that it's a negative piece of legislation. So I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves, but, you know, it's like we're under pressure to do these things, but not everybody necessarily wants to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people need to know that they may have, if the zoning for a single family house has changed for the lot, that somebody could have a 3-story, 4-unit building right next door to them in a single-family neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important to take into consideration.
Yeah.
So while we're planning all these things, that's all well and good.
Mm.
However, I think there is going to be a reaction from people. Okay. I think there are going to be pitchforks.
I think one thing, sorry, Professor Michael. I think why don't we add to the agenda, at the end, why don't we come back to communication? Because I'd also love your input on what those key messages should be going out to the public, you know, as we really wrap up this process. Because I hear what you're saying. I think you're absolutely right. Most people, A, aren't aware, and B, won't necessarily appreciate all the complexities to it and everything. So is that okay if we circle back and focus on communication?
Yeah, because we should let people brief what's on the internet can be pretty alarming. Certain councils called it a sledgehammer approach.
Other communities.
Yeah. It'll be confusing for people. I didn't know what kind of reaction. I thought when I came in here, you were going to be pretty upset. But you're explaining it to me in a way that, it's not so bad.
We're not directly impacted like we've not been told, right? We're not a disability that has been. Maybe.
How do you mean we're not directly impacted?
We've been told, too.
We've been told.
Yes, but we're not on the list that we have to, obey. I mean,
We're not on the naughty list.
That's what I mean.
We still have to change everything.
We have to make some changes, but
obey and those other ones had another layer of requirements put on them that they have to deliver a certain number of housing units in 5 years. So there's this day after the
warrant. We still have to make these changes. It's not that we're not on that list.
Totally.
I think that's very important, and that's been my concern looking at all of this, because we're a committee in this OCP process, and public engagement is important in that process, and all of this timing is going to throw that out of whack.
Yeah.
And so what I really want to understand is what we're doing going forward, but also at what stages are we going to involve the public?
Yeah.
Because they are going to be looking to us and to this process, to some extent at least, to be informing them. So.
Well, I think they did, I'm going to jump in, but I emailed you last week and said, could you do this? And you did, it's great. And I think this is the beginning of the communications plan. We started to explain what these terms mean. And I mean, a lot of people won't take the time to be interested, but anyone who will take it is going to have a lot of really good information.
So that's a really good point about communication that I did cover at the beginning when I introduced the sheet. But you see on the right-hand side, it says an IAP2 spectrum.
Okay.
Apologies for the acronym. That stands for International Association for Public Participation. And they have 5 different levels, like where you're just telling people information. That's the lowest level. We're all the way up to, and you just decide for yourself. Right? As municipalities, we can't do that. You decide for yourself. Other than election reference. So, but there's a spectrum of 5 things. So on the right-hand side of each of these items, we put where on the IAP2 spectrum it would be. And this is actually very important to discuss, because for that first 6 months, we don't really have time to do any real, meaningful two-way consultation. So I think we need to be really clear about that, in that we do value your input, but we don't really have time to go through the process that we would normally undertake for these kind of substantial changes. So on the right-hand side, as we go through, I'll just tell you what we've jotted down in the work plan so far in terms of consultation level, so that people have an idea of what's coming.
What are the 5 levels?
So inform is the lowest, and then there's consult, where you're asking people for feedback. And then collaborate, where you're working together. Engage is the third one, sorry. Yeah, and collaborate is where your sleeves are rolled up, you're all working together. I think of that one like an OCP review. So that's 4 out of 5. And then the 5th one, you can't really do
it. It's a collaborative power.
Oh, yeah, consult involved.
What is this? Consult? Engage.
Inform, consult, involve, collaborate, and empower. I notice you're starting to put them in all of the reports to council.
Yeah, number 6 is revolution, right?
Take 4 or 6.
I can send that section out if it's helpful.
That'd be great.
Yeah. It's really helpful.
But Luke, what concerns me about the listing of items here is that we're not, and I take your point that it's going to be limited time to communicate, but I think people need to understand what this process is going to be.
Yeah.
Right? And somewhere we need to be communicating that.
So I totally agree. We need to communicate. I guess what I was talking about was more like public engagement, like two-way meetings, like, I think the need to communicate to the public is probably more important than ever, you know, as we go through these stages. So
are all these,
are
all these planning tasks on the left-hand side, are they directly applicable to the work you expect this group to do?
Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah. I don't know. We haven't gotten to that level of detail in terms of who and what quite yet.
I mean, some of this doesn't sound like OCP review to me.
No.
So I don't know what I'm doing here.
We're kind of off the deep end. Like, this is OCP review plus.
You said yes, great. And it's all, almost multiple OCP reviews.
It is, yeah.
And that, I think, is going to be confusing.
Well, it's the whole structure and process of the OCP. It's under review.
Exactly.
And content. I guess you have to use it however you see fit.
Okay, so now moving into engineering. So we've had lots of discussions with other departments.
Yeah.
There's some things that the engineering department is going to be able to be done. So earlier, I think it was Bill, you mentioned that there are extensions available. If municipality can show that there's a constraint that we can't service something, you know, that quickly, then you can file for an extension, and that can be granted. So I don't know whether you have any areas that really qualify.
What does an extension mean?
It means that you don't have to amend the zoning for that particular area of town until a later date. So, for example, the minister could say, okay, we agree. You don't have to change the zoning for that specific area of town that has no servicing until 2030. Or, you know, I think the maximum they can go is 2030.
I thought you were just going to make pipes longer.
What's that?
I'm laughing at myself. I just thought the engineer was going to say, we need to run that sound 32 or 5 more blocks or something.
But you need time to do that.
I know. But the extension is temporal.
Oh, I see. That kind of...
No, I got it wrong. You're saying we're reviewing this to find out if we need more time.
We need more time.
Yeah.
Like a deadline extension.
But in the interim, if you get that extension, then the increase in density would not apply to those lots of
benefits. That area. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's really time sensitive. We need to get on that.
Can I ask a question about that? That was great. But if it's determined that you need an extension, does that invalidate the densification at all? Or is the assumption going to be you still need to rezone, but we're just not going to give you the extension for the infrastructure until later?
No, it would... If we applied for an extension to the deadline, we would be not amending the zoning for the area that needed the extension until a later date, presumably by which point we have the services in place to support that density. So, for example, if we didn't have a water main that could support any more development in Charville or something like that, then we would say, sorry, Charville, now, you know, we're keeping it as is. We're running the water line there right now, and when that water line exists, then we will change the story. And that's an extension.
This is a real gray area, because the first thing that came up when the legislation was talked about was, what if we don't have the infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
So this is really getting right on that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. So then the second part there, which is that all of our senators who are supposed to be on the district, they do all the sewage processing in French Creek. So they've asked us to project what we think the impact of these zoning changes would be in the foreseeable future. If that number is too high, then they're going to say, we need an extension.
Mm.
You can't put any more into the pipe until we upgrade X. Right? So I don't know whether that's actually going to be an issue, because they're in the process of doubling that plant right now.
Yeah.
So
huge budget.
Yeah. All right. The provincial legislation says that if there are hazardous areas in town that cannot be mitigated, then we don't have to upzone those properties. So, for example, we had a single-family lot on top of a steep cliff, and there was some geotechnical concern. We don't have to upzone that one to allow 4 units, but we do have to identify all that stuff before think that deadline is actually June 1st to submit an extension request and also to identify those areas. So a little bit of homework there. The ones that immediately come to mind are like sea level rise, you know, the lower areas where I think we have a pretty solid argument to say that, that those areas, unless they're all provided with a canoe, should not be zoned to allow for it.
Judge's rule will like that.
But that's
Judge's rule will like that.
Judge's rule is a bit higher, like even lower than Judge's rule is that Campolo Road, like that kind of area, it can crest down on the point there.
Got all the cliffs along Eagle Crest, or?
Possibly. Those are all very large lots, though, so we have to think, not so much, you know, the zoning won't allow you to go closer to the back, the top of the bank, but it would allow you to have four units in a structure somewhere around the property.
Mm.
Right.
Mm.
Okay, so, you know, that's, those are ways that, you know, there could be exceptions to units to their changes. Here's an interesting one that's come up in discussion. So, then there will be lower parking requirements than what we have right now. Fair enough. But what that essentially means is that instead of people parking on their lot, there will be more parking on the street. And if there needs to be parking on the street, then there can't be things like boulders in the way. There can't be things like people's irrigation systems, you know, out in there to keep people from parking.
Or how about a simple arithmetic? For instance, my lot is 66 feet wide. Right, a car is say 15 feet wide. So four cars could park if there was no driveway accessing my. But we're putting four units on my lot.
Yeah.
And they have two cars each. So that's eight cars. And there's only room for four cars on the street. So what do we do with that?
You figure it out.
We all have to drive a Fiat 500. What do we do?
Well, the parking requirements will be reduced on your house specifically to be one car required on your lot.
Okay. So the four would fit across the
street. So four would require four cars on your lot. And then, I mean, I don't know if they've done any sort of analysis like you're talking about, but essentially you have four actually on site and then probably four on the street, right, if there were two cars. So. No, it's not unreasonable, but it definitely doesn't work if there's boulders and irrigation. So,
it doesn't work in cul-de-sacs.
No, all good point.
There's a lot of cul-de-sacs in certain areas of town.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really, I mean, it would seem to me that you then have to have official streets with official sidewalks and official boulevards and all of that, which would add an enormous cost.
Mm-hmm.
To the town.
So that's a really good point. You know, when we talked a little bit about but we may want to formalize that, you know, it seems like there could be a system where if your frontage looks like this, then you can have the density. But if your frontage doesn't look like this, and what that frontage looks like could have things like a need for a sidewalk, a need for street trees, and, you know, so that if they want that extra density, then they have to invest in frontage improvements. So,
part of the guidelines.
Yeah, that could be in the guidelines.
Yeah, that's right in there.
But also, that if there's four cars parked in front of my property and four cars parked in front of the property in front of me, then it leaves a very narrow street to circulate.
Yeah.
Welcome to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Right. The thing is, we're not stuck in Vancouver. We're not used to that. That's true, but we're not used to that. So it'll be a big shock if that's what we're going for.
I think it's a terrible scenario. There are lots of areas in Vancouver that have been like that for years.
Right.
Where you literally have one lane.
Right.
And it is very congested, and it's
true.
Not a lot of it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
And recreational vehicles, another issue.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing more and more recreational vehicles.
Yeah.
Some are being parked in driveways now,
mm-hmm.
and that requires people to put their cars on the street.
Mm-hmm.
RV parking.
Yeah.
Make sure that's down there. I haven't, the RV parking hasn't come up, but you're absolutely right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, aside from boulders and sprinkling systems that are encroached on the town property, I'll call it. What about things that are more permanent structures?
they be told they have to. Yes, I was thinking.
Yeah, I think that's right.
What about the telephone poles? What's that? What about the telephone poles?
Well, they're not on anymore.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, where are they? Well, whose property is it?
They're always in the right way.
They're in the right way.
But could you really park four cars in front of a 66-foot lot with a telephone pole there? I don't see it.
The telephone poles wouldn't be in the road. They'd be in the area that would contain the sidewalk and the street tree.
Oh, so what's on there, though, is the light, the town light.
And I'm thinking of my property, that's the only I can go at. There's no sidewalk in front of me.
Yeah.
Some of my landscape is on city property. I don't, it is on every house.
Yeah.
We have a swale, and a swale and no sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
I hear all the way through Quaker Woods.
Yeah.
So what's gonna happen? How do you park a car where there's no sidewalks?
Yeah, so
how do you dig up people's front yards? So that's, anyway, it's a big problem.
Well, the pitchforks will then come out.
Exactly, and they'll be everywhere.
Because on my property, you could actually park the four cars perpendicular because of just the way they landscaped it to the road, so they wouldn't have to have the four cars in the street.
That's interesting, because I think because there's no sidewalk in front of my property, I think you could probably dig out the part that's landscaped.
Yeah, and then you
can park four cars perpendicular.
Yeah.
We do have a little bit later in the work plan the street and boulevard standards,
yeah,
which kind of gets a little bit more to what
two
of you are getting at. Like, so that's the slide for next year, by the OCP review.
I can accommodate density.
Go.
Wait a minute, you just said if we look at the top of your planning prior to June, we're going to talk about interim design guidelines.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about boulevard design guidelines.
Okay. Yeah, we can.
I think we have to.
Yeah. Okay. So let's include that. There's an interim design guidelines. Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Okay. So another one is ditch infill policy. So
we
currently there's a lot of areas in the town that don't have a formalized storm network, and our ditch actually infiltrates, a fair bit of water. So it's not that they can't be infilled, but if people infill them, they create more parking or a more, green space. It needs to be done properly. So our engineers flagged it. We need to take a look at that ditch infill policy.
Yeah, it's not consistent at all.
We allow it,
yeah,
and where we don't allow it, and if we do allow it, what it looks like. So that's on their work plan. Also related to stormwater policy planning, because if you're covering a larger proportion of every lot, cars, and houses, then less area for enough water to naturally infiltrate into the ground.
Okay.
Yeah. So our corporate administration side, personally supporting everything we do, the province has recommended that we update our delegation bylaw. So right now, all development permits, well, I'd say 90% of development permits go to council. So in their new guidelines, the province says you should delegate all development permits to staff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so the idea is that council will front load all the guidelines and everything like that. So when it actually comes time for someone to apply, it doesn't go through the council cycle, it just goes and it's reviewed by staff. But that does require council to weigh in on which development permits they're comfortable, saying, we'll delegate these. There may be some that they choose to hold for themselves, and that's, that is their decision.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely the province is pushing towards all development permits being delegated.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a relatively significant change.
Mm-hmm.
And then communications is on the list, which we're going to circle back to later, but that is something that our corporate administration is working on already, and that we can consult in. That's where our next 6 months will come. It's going to be pretty busy.
Well, that's a good segue to my question about, it says the next meeting is on February the 5th, which is neither a third Monday, nor is it weekly, so I'm wondering where that
sorry, did I get the wrong date?
It's in December.
Did I get the wrong date? I'm so sorry.
Kind of sounds like it.
Am I in Hawaii that day?
Or could you be?
Okay.
So what is the date? September?
No, they don't know. To be determined.
Okay.
That's the wrong date?
Yeah.
So why don't we just put to be determined? I don't think that was intentionally upset.
Can't be the 19th. That's family days.
It's on the Monday.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you're asking good questions. This is what I want. You know, there are lots of things that we haven't thought of that you don't see on this list, right? Things like the RV parking, boats, or whatever it is. So, second half of the year, we need to be putting together our housing report, which we already talked about. The province has a requirement that after we make these changes, we've accepted any lands in the town, we need to provide them with notice about what areas we haven't included and justify it. Yeah. So we're not going to be including, say, all of our farmlands or large lots. Like, there's lots of stuff in the town that will not be upzoned to allow for units, so we need to give them a complete list of everything that we've accepted and explain why. Housing needs report. We need to update our development application fees and charges. It's kind of just an administrative thing, but we need to do that. We talked earlier about the ACC bylaw, you know, that new financing tool. And I think we need to continue thinking about what amenities we need in the town, both in the short term and the long term, and expect to adopt some ACC charges to accompany those. Someone brought up view corridors. I don't know whether we should talk about it that soon, or maybe it's not a must-have, but it was flagged by another staff member.
It's a can of worms.
It is?
Because we could add another whole bunch of things to that list, similar types of things.
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined to, like,
take
that one out, because I'm not sure. Okay, and then the big task for the second half of this year is we need to start preparing for the OGQ review, which would be 2025. So that takes time quite a bit of prep.
And I just want to make a comment about that. We didn't really say anything about it now, but the first thing I'm going to ask you is to tell people what's going to change in the OCC, how it's going to change, and why it's important.
It's the communication.
Yeah, it's a big communications piece.
Mm.
But it also seems to me that we're going to be pushed into a truncated process. So we started off with the terms of reference or with the, I remember the original memo that we got, which laid out a number of steps, right? And there's good, and talked about the process being similar to the process used in 2016 and 2018.
Yeah.
So now we're going to be completely and to do what was originally anticipated in terms of a full OCP review, are we now basically pushing that into 1 year?
Because
or I wouldn't think you'd want to do this, but, or are we thinking that that could continue into 2026 when there would be yet another amended OCP?
Well, 2026 is an election year, so that's probably not the year to do another OCP review. Just out of matter of fact, the town has avoided doing OCPs, and it's nothing related to this cycle. So,
but the time, time is pretty short to fit all of a traditional OCP process into what you seem to have.
Well, right now the way I'm kind of contemplating is that it will be exclusively focused on housing. I don't see how we could accommodate the full breadth of everything that is normally considered. Like, we have a period of starting. But someone brought up earlier that the quality of life survey as it relates to the housing needs report. That's a really interesting idea I hadn't thought about. Like, as we start our first housing needs report, it actually coincides potentially really well with what we have on the books as the quality of life survey.
It does.
How could that turn the housing needs report into something that's actually really valuable, right?
I think that the quality of life survey is going to tell us a lot about how people feel about housing and how it's not working.
Mm.
And it'll feed right into this process. It could be very, very productive.
Mm.
will probably tell us a lot of the images and hopes that people have that granny will come and live with them or their kids or whatever that would tell you a lot about the small-scale multi-unit demand.
I think so. Hmm. I think I see a lot of hopeful opportunities in this situation.
Mm-hmm. So then the quality of life survey would be focused on housing.
It kind of is already.
Well, I think it's
well,
there's a lot of money.
But there's lots of other things.
But it's done. And yeah. That's why I think it...
Maybe we just preface it by saying this survey covers a lot of topics, but the topic of the moment is really housing, and we were looking for as many constructive comments as we could get about housing. It was do a preface that kind of focuses it more.
Okay.
So today, when the provincial government is saying you need to do an LCP2, are they saying specific to housing?
Yeah. Okay. An LCP review.
So,
they're not calling an LCP. They just say you need to amend your LCP. Maybe they're not saying it's an LCP review.
Mm.
So, they're requiring that we update our LCP to include any use that needed in the housing department. So, those have to be systems.
Okay, but they're not saying, if they're saying you need to do an OCP review,
mm-hmm.
they're not saying you have to do the whole thing.
No, correct. Yeah.
Only as it pertains to housing.
Yes.
So we talked about the impact of the density on engineering stuff, but what about schools and medical facilities and blah, blah, blah? I mean, population has a surge. It's going to
yeah.
have an effect on all of that.
Good question. I haven't even, I'm sure anyone asked, but I wonder whether the ACT is used for those types of services, potentially, right?
It does say in the manual, I mean, it talks about the fact that the local governments are going to have to look at the long-term infrastructure
mm-hmm.
impact and how they're going to pay, what improvements are going to be needed, how they're going to pay for them, all that kind of stuff. So, that may not happen right away because they've got to focus on individual lots and determine servicing, but
yeah.
that certainly has got to come at some point
mm-hmm.
in the fairly near future.
Yeah, if you come with your kids, you want to know that they can go to school, for example.
Yeah.
Even if you're thinking of coming someday with your kids,
yeah.
you don't want to be confident that KFS will close or whatever.
Well,
it
will
explode.
But then there's all the amenities that go with the school, and
mm.
the actual school districts fund very little of the nice to have, you know, and when it comes to school improvements,
uh-huh.
like playgrounds, for example, the playing field, those almost tend to be completely funded by other things, other places, like the municipalities might, you know, pay for the playing field through the playgrounds, right? So that's an interesting one. I think we need to do a bit of more homework on that. Make sure that's on there, like the potential to use ACCs to help support school amenities and also potentially medical facilities, right?
Well, there was to be an update of that 10-year-old report on attracting and keeping young families
mm-hmm.
and youth,
yeah.
which is needed. But that's got very high impact on housing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to find out the high schoolers I worked with 10 years ago, and now the taxpayers with two kids and stuff,
mm-hmm.
none of them living in Quag.
Yeah.
And what's in their heads and what was in their way. But if we were successful at attracting young families,
mm-hmm.
we would have schools, programs, libraries, civic centers and stuff
mm-hmm.
as things we'd have to buy and pay for. So it's all...
Yeah.
The schools not so long ago were operating below their...
Oh, yeah, they are.
So I don't know where they're at now, but maybe there's room to grow.
We still have other schools.
Yeah, right, so then we know that that's maybe, definitely that's, you know, not sure.
But I guess I'm going around the surface a bit, like, just off the top of your head, Luke,
mm-hmm.
we have a housing problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because there are thousands of people trying to live here, or is it because we have the wrong type of housing?
Hmm.
And if it's the wrong type of housing, then we're going to build the right type of housing. Who pays for it?
Mm-hmm.
Do the developers pay for it? Is it cheaper because there's less land used for the housing types? Who's guaranteeing that it's going to be cheaper? Are they going to build $4 million townhouses on a residential lot?
Mm-hmm.
How is that going to help anybody?
Yeah.
It's not going to help the people with two kids living in Arrington. So this feels to be like, yeah, well, we need more housing. But what we really need is housing that people can afford.
Mm-hmm.
We need more really need. Places to live.
Yeah. We need more places to live that are affordable. The two go together. But I don't see anyone dealing with the affordability side of it.
Yeah.
Well, we think the tenants of the province is to reduce the red tape for developers, get programs going to change the footprint of these properties to make them more cost effective. And the idea that will be passed along to the consumer.
And that by increasing supply,
the big picture is like, it's not going to have an immediate short term because people can't afford, it's not that developers are all bad people, but it's just cost. If it costs $1 million to build a unit, they're not going to rent, sell it for less than,
Of course, yeah.
$1 million plus. So, and
then are they going to come to my house on a typical little one, a 160 by 66 foot lot? And are they going to pay $1 million and tear down my house? And still make a profit out of building something else. I can't see it.
No.
That's why I do, buy them. Take deep breaths.
Just say it ain't messed up.
That's why we're saying nobody's going to be big in the gates of Colton Beach Town because the money's not there.
Yeah, so earlier I told you that the reason this week is asking, how many units do you think are going to be developed in the next year? And the answer is not really that many. Because if you look at, I've taken off list of all the parcels in the town, all the assessed values, and if the value is over a certain amount, it's not going to be redeveloped because of how they're doing that. You just know that. And if it's an empty lot, okay, that's fair game. We're going to see those in, so then it might be multiple units, right? But the houses aren't going to be demolished unless it's an inexpensive house, right? So it's a pretty easily numerical analysis and not the, spoil the outcome or anything, but the number of units that I would expect coming directly out of this is not that high.
But we can go into the ALR. And so what land do we have to work with that would reduce the cost because we have
so is this bill going to be successful? Is it going to really reach
the country?
That's where I think I really like the idea of reaching out to the people who do wildlife survey or something, to find out what they actually would like, right? Because if there's housing types that they actually think would be able to integrate nicely into the fabric of our neighborhoods and not really be in imposition, our lots are big enough that I think you could build around the existing houses, bring families together and sort of like have a little rental unit.
We have a lot of single family homes that are on wasted land.
And
they're cutting their grass, sprinkling the lawns all summer. It's a different way of doing it.
But we built our cottage on our just barely enough space, and there was a need to communicate with the community that they weren't too worried, but it's nothing but a benefit to the community.
Yeah.
And everyone is like us in terms of some yearning to have the family able to be closer together, especially since young people starting out can't possibly do it without someone.
And the bigger between the time that you did it and now is that setbacks will be significantly reduced.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see these things pop up in your front yard. Where someone's just going along now, it could have a sweet. So in answer to your question earlier, Andrew, and then I will go back to you, Susan, but is the housing that we have now what we need? And I do very strongly believe that it's not, because our community is at a certain age where they don't want the housing that we have. It just happens to be that we have 4,000 single family dwellings when probably half of them would love to have something a little smaller, right? So
The houses are all twice as big as they were when I was a boy in Port Alberni.
Yeah.
I grew up at 1,100 square feet. And now the house, he could sell house 1,100 square feet.
So anyway, that's my opinion. Yes, your gosh, it's all right.
I was just going to make a comment following what Jan talked about. It's great if you add a secondary suite or a garden suite or whatever and make that available to people to rent.
Mm-hmm.
But if you allow those, as the government has done with the short-term rental legislation, you allow them to then rent them as short-term rentals. To me, you know, you're putting you're adding with one hand and you're taking away with the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the two go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, though, and is when I looked at the application that is coming forward on Wednesday for a lot in town,
mm-hmm.
I think it's very interesting to look at, because there you've got a lot that, based on the legislation that's in place, the prescribed number of units that we would be required to allow there is 4 units. And based on the current subdivision regulations, they couldn't subdivide that property because it has to be a minimum X amount. So what they're proposing to do is they're proposing to subdivide into 3 lots and put 2 units on each. So you are now ending up with narrower lots, and they're asking for a change in the subdivision regulation to permit smaller parcel size. So a lot that right now looks like you would be able to put 4 units on, by virtue of the subdivision, now could put 6.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned the subdivision before because I just think it's fundamental. You manipulate those parcel sizes, and then all of your projections about servicing and other things that you need, I mean, you're exponentially greater. And so I do think that's going to be an issue, is whether what is being proposed in that application is something that the town is now going to be willing to entertain on all other town lots that are, you know, 800 square meters and higher.
Yeah.
So I think that's...
And that's an actual proposal that's coming forward.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
coming out.
Where is the property, please?
Hemlock.
The Tree Street.
No?
Hemlock.
Hemlock and...
First?
Oh, no, not first. No.
Hemlock and...
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we've got real life examples over there of what to do and what not to do. We're lucky, actually. We've been doing it for a while.
Yeah. So I think we're going to need to switch through pretty quickly because that's Anna and I will have a meeting in 20-ish
minutes.
Okay. So,
because we're going to come back.
What's that?
I always run away and come back.
Depends on how long we've gone.
Yeah.
So 2025, we're doing deep and no OCD review. Whereas 2024 is very minimal consultation. I think, like, then, you know, jump in and really have in-depth conversations with the community and bring them into the process of actually generating solutions. So that's where it's really digging for the design guidelines and into street and boulevard standards. We would need to update our regional context statement with the regional districts in Nanaimo. And then here's something for you to ponder. We have a year to think about it, but I'm asking myself whether the current structure of the OCP is ideally structured for this type of change cycle. We're updating it every 5 years. Do we want an OCP that has so many different facets to it? We're going to be changing it every 5 years? Or do we want to maybe take some of that stuff and put it into a different plan? So, I don't know, I'm just...
That's staggered. It's one big lump with pieces that have different review schedules.
So that's food for thought. We're not going to answer that one again today, but the way we have it now does not need to be the way it is.
When you say the way, you mean the contents of the document?
That's right. The breadth and depth of what's covering where it is. And over the last, I'd say, 40 years since OCPs have really started to get into the mainstream, they've grown from either streamlined like land use plans to omnibus, you know, like 700-page documents.
They're so complex that they're not useful. they defeat public consensus.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a planner. I do read complex documents. You have to do an executive summary.
Yeah.
Because and documents are too challenging for people.
And to determine whether something complies with an OCC or not. Is a subject of intensive debate because you can always find two policies that contradict each other on any topic.
Yeah.
And, you know, life is complex, I get it, but if we need to take an OCC and then the next year come up with a zoning bylaw that complies with that OCC and compliance is entirely a matter of intense debate, I just wonder whether that's the best structure, so that's for you to think about.
And I just reread it, thinking about all of this stuff, and I have to say that I came away thinking this does not serve the purpose.
No.
It really doesn't.
No.
And there's way too much repetition.
Yeah.
You can really cut it back. You could just cut it back right now. So when someone's really trying to get an idea about a particular area, it's just way too cumbersome.
Yeah.
So I do think you need to take a fresh look at it and get some thoughts and how it could be used, how we can communicate things in a way that people really understand the vision.
We have this problem all the time when we plan a hospital. We do 2 years worth of planning work, and no one can understand the document because, I mean, you don't want to know what the technical requirements are in the next facility. You don't want to know that. You want to know how many people are going to be able to have cardiac surgery in that hospital. It has to be somewhere where the information is transparent. So we have to design the document so there's a real preliminary piece that explains the building to anyone who wants to know, depending on what their interest is.
Yeah.
Are we kind of person? We have to figure out who wants to read this, you know. I just think people wrestle with our document.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a high level.
A very high level, yeah.
Zoning bylaws are difficult typically for people to understand, and those have all of the details. But the OCP is supposed to be this, you know, high level.
Yeah.
It should be very readable, and it should be much shorter than it is.
And I think the consulting community, of which I'm a member, you know, there's a lot of responsibility with this. Like, you need to design documents that are useful to many different levels of readers.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not useful, they're not real planning docs.
Yeah.
So this is fun. So
I'm just looking forward to 2027 and 2028.
Mm-hmm.
We've got OCP neighborhood plans.
Mm-hmm.
So is there particular reason why you don't think that should be discussed in what we're looking at now?
About the concept of thinking about our OCP a little bit differently, and there are communities that have, you know, really high-level streamlined OCPs and then more detailed neighborhood level plans. And so I put it in here just because I'm not 100% sure we want to go this route, but if we did, we could take our time with neighborhood plans outside of the one-year intensive.
Yeah, I think this is a really important issue because, say, I live in Pollica Woods, you live somewhere else. When you look at that executive summary, you're going to go, this is the executive summary. Where is my neighborhood referred to? How does it translate into my neighborhood? You're going to be neighborhood sensitive. So I think structuring it according to the various areas of the city and the neighborhoods is the way to go. It's like when we do a hospital, the radiologist goes straight to the X-ray department and he looks into the document. He doesn't go to pediatric surgery. He goes right to the X-ray department, diagnostic imaging, you know, and that's the way people are going to do it. They're going to look for what pertains to their working or living circumstances. It should be really transparent.
Yeah.
But when we're doing the initial review that we're going to be doing now, or the initial work, one of the questions I have is whether when the town puts in its restrictions, zoning restrictions or whatever, how those are going to differ between areas. So are we going to see village neighborhood, you know, certain concepts, and maybe we see a reduction in the minimum parcel size for subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
But then, what is EcoCrest going to look like? So I think we have to deal with neighborhoods to some extent.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because different neighborhoods have different lot sizes. if you were a developer and you had a challenge of fitting more units on the lot, I bet the solution would be different if you were in, you know, Eagle Crest versus West Wallen Beach. Right? It's different solutions. So, Councilor Vanderbalk, I agree with you, like, maybe we could integrate that into the other specifically review part.
Sure.
But if we need our sponsors, I need to kind of put it into an outer year where you could focus on a specific neighborhood by itself, for example. All right, so we promised we would circle back, and I think we have enough time to touch on communication. So let's just spend a few minutes thinking about what are the key messages that we should be communicating to the public in this early stage as we start this process.
I think we need to let people know that this is here. Because there's a lot of people that aren't aware of it.
Right.
And I think that what it means for them specifically in whatever area they live in, how it could affect them.
Okay.
Because I think that that's
here's an example.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think we should go back even further because I think most people don't know what an OCP is. I think we should say that we're reviewing the OCP and there's important changes coming to bear on the OCP. Because they don't know what an OCP is. I've watched them be completely stultified by that document in these meetings we had up the street 4 years ago.
Yeah.
They need to know this is what an OCP is. This year, there's really big changes, and these are what they goal, and this is the timeline. So
maybe some sort of that tone to the communications around, we have your back. We're aware of it. We know of the problems, and if you have things to say, there are places where you'll be able to say them. Like,
yeah, okay.
Confidence.
Yeah.
So that gets back to the issue of process and what's going to happen at certain times.
Mm-hmm.
I do think people need to understand the basic elements of the changes. I also think they need to know how the town is going to approach this before June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
So not only how you approach dealing with these changes, but also how you handle applications.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a bit of an issue, and I think again, the application on Wednesday, the issue of public hearing. I think the town's got to be very clear about when public hearings are not required. Because I think that could be a potential problem.
Yeah.
I also think they need to understand the process that the town's going through in terms of looking at parcels and what exempt. At some point, maybe not the initial communication, you need to start to be talking, I think, about what's going to guide the town in determining what restrictions apply in different areas. I mean, is everything going to be three stories? It's sort of a later approach, but I think a lot has to be communicated at the first instance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
For people to understand what's happening and what we're doing.
Because with restricted areas, as I understand from reading it, there will be no public hearings.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, as of December.
If
residential development proposal complies with the OTP, then there cannot be a public hearing. So, and your point was good, that the application on Wednesday, we didn't speak to it explicitly, so I'm going to have to add that to my presentation as an extra motion that we're going to recommend the council make, because the proposal on Wednesday is in line with the OCP, and so therefore the town is not able to do a public hearing, but council needs to weigh in and confirm this if it complies with the OCP. That's not staff authority to say yes, it complies or not. So, but it's a really interesting thing where we're making this up as we go. Like every municipality is looking at the other municipalities saying, how do you handle that first public hearing thing? Because nobody's done it.
But does it comply with the density statements in the OCP? I didn't think it did.
No,
you're too low.
Well, I think the requested density is too high.
Mm-hmm.
So I think,
mm-hmm.
I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but if you're going to deny a public hearing, you mm-hmm. have to be absolutely certain that they're not entitled, there's no public hearing entitled.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that needs to be.
If there were six units and it was not near a high transit line, then you six is too many.
Four.
But our OCC has a density target that's much higher than that. Yeah.
For that area. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't read it that way.
So therefore it's in line with our OCC. Therefore there's no public hearing.
But the council needs to.
I apologize. Believe it or not, we wrote that report on December 15th, maybe. And the province, we're just starting on this stuff in terms of the actual public hearing legislation. So that part was missed in the memo. So my apologies to you.
No, it's okay. I just think these are some of the finer points that the public needs to understand, or there will be an uproar about no public hearing, right?
Gotcha.
And
it's not affordable housing we're talking about.
No, nothing
we talked about.
And I think that Andrew raised the point about housing. I don't know that what the province is recommending is ever going to be affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Their concentration is not on affordable housing. It's just more housing.
Yeah.
And if you look at Vancouver, they've had more housing for years and years and years, and they still have an affordability.
We're not dealing with the economics of the housing market at all.
It's not affordable for it to be developed in the first place.
Yeah.
So unless the province or the town steps up, or somebody, a society, and throws some money at it, it's not going to happen.
Right. But I have heard that the province is going to be making a further announcement about affordable.
Everybody needs to read the article in the Guardian, I hope. So from the right to buy to housing crisis, how home ownership killed Britain's property dream.
Mm-hmm.
They turned all the council houses where people were really comfortable and knew they could always live there on an affordable rent. They said you can buy your own place. Now they're all capitalists making billions of pounds out of their council houses and nobody feels like they've got any secure home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
They've killed the dream of home ownership. Nobody's dealing with what housing really means to people.
Right. But the dream of home ownership is something being killed anyway.
Yeah, sure it is. We're not dealing with that problem.
Hmm.
Yeah. But I just wanted to say everybody should come. I should have a party and I'll invite you all just to see what it looks like when you build one. It's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's we're not a developer.
Exactly.
We're trying to solve a family problem.
Yeah. Great.
So getting back to the communications, I guess my question is, what role are we going to play in assisting the town in getting communications out to the public in a timely manner?
Do we have a role in
Do we have a role, or?
Well, you might have a very good role, because you're a pretty good sounding board cross-section on the community in terms of identifying issues that need to be addressed, right? So I would love to spend more time talking about communication, maybe even at the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So between now and the next meeting, we have a committee of the whole scheduled on the 24th, I think it is, and a work plan very similar to what you see here is going on that agenda, because I'd like council to also know all this stuff, right? And in terms of what we're working on for the next 6 months and what the future years would look like. So coming out of that meeting, because they may have feedback on the approach, but then we really need to dig into getting it done, that communication, and also the changes that we're talking about. The zoning and OCC changes.
Do you have the staff to do all of that, or are you enough overtime money to?
Yeah, I think so. We were very fortunate that we were going to be doing an OCC review this year, and council had identified a long list of strategic initiatives that we were going to be doing this year, and
right.
the council staffed us up last year.
Yeah.
And so, for better or worse, I gave the council, thank you for the extra staff. We're going to need them for something that you didn't intend to do before.
Mm-hmm.
But if we didn't have that, we would be completely out of luck. So, case in point, Liz, thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Yeah, I feel like we're in a fairly good position.
Oh, I see.
And we actually did get a little bit of money from the province to help fund some of this work as well. So if we need consulting support. Yeah. I think we need to wrap up the meeting. Councilor Vandenbroek's already packing up. So once again, like the two big things I want you to, if you could think about implications, and then also what are the other implications coming out of these changes that we need to stick in the work plan somehow, right? What are we missing? We always miss something.
Yeah, well,
it's outside of planning reality. Like, if you get everything right, it's just,
then
you don't
then worry.
Yeah. So think about that, please. And we will send out a date for the next meeting.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry. You need to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. I'll make one.
You can adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.